Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Meet Grimanessa Amorós. She's an artist who uses sculpture, video, and light to create her breathtaking, inspiring, large-scale installations, and who is completely comfortable combining nostalgia with the latest technology and materials. She has exhibited in the United States, Europe, Asia, and Latin America, a list of venues that goes on and on. Born in Peru, Grimanessa says she was obsessed with maps when she was very young, drawing them over and over. This didn't go unnoticed by her mother, who enrolled her 11-year-old daughter in art classes. Grimanessa painted throughout her teenaged years and had a sold-out show at 18. 3 years later, in 1984, after attending the University of Peru, Grimanessa left Lima and headed for New York City, where she attended the Art Student League, and Manhattan is where she lives and works. Grimanessa has been the recipient of numerous grants, including the National Endowment for the Arts Visual Artist Fellowship and Artist Residency Fellowships at the Santa Fe Art Institute, just to name two. This introduction could last for hours, so let's not waste any more time, and let's really meet Grimanessa. Welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate the invitation for me to be able to share my work with all your listeners.
Well, I want to begin by saying that you said you always thought of paint in sculptural terms. What do you mean by that?
Well, because what happened is that when I was painting, I always was aware about doing it with layers. And so I think actually I always wanted to be a sculptor. But as a young artist, sometimes, and when you are living in New York, real estate in Manhattan could be a little bit steep. So I knew that I had to wait a couple of years, you know, for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the sculptural element that my painting always had, these very thick layers, because somehow I was sculpting with paint as well.
But when you were at home, when you were still in Peru, is that what your bent was? Were you more of a painter or did you experiment?
I started. I think that, you know, it's quite pretty probably, you know, normal for an artist to start with painting. Mm-hmm. It's a way, it's an introduction. It's the way you learn composition and colors. And so that's what how I started at age 11. But I think that you create a development as the years pass. And once I reached a certain point in my life, I felt that I wanted to share with my viewers something else. And I felt that also I knew too well how to do those paintings. And I felt that I wanted some other challenges.
But when you were 11, what was that like inside of you, where you just felt that you had something to share, that you had to express yourself, right? It was not anything that you could contain. You just knew that you had to, that you had a talent.
I don't think that you are aware that you have a talent. I think that more than anything is you have to a confidence to do what you know how to do well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you know you did something well?
Well, you know, because I always got very great grades in art in my school. I remember the art teacher will give me a lot of extras, you know, like, for example, you know, I had, another student friend carrying my easel or helping me to go. And I was the only one that she would send me to the fields to paint while the other ones were in class. You know, they was very supportive as well, you know, because he recognized that I had something else to bring.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, at school also I got a lot of support. I got a support from my parents, obviously. And so that just gave me the energy to keep moving forward.
And the confidence, I would imagine.
Yes, of course.
And so you were really encouraged by your family and by your teachers so that you could pursue more art.
It's always nice to have A's sometimes at school.
Now, you had a sold-out show when you were 18?
Yes.
That's wild. Right. What did you exhibit?
It was my first exhibition. I study also psychology. So what happened is I was doing two careers at the same time. I was studying art in private ateliers. And then I would study psychology, for example, from, I guess, 7 o'clock in the morning until like about maybe 5 o'clock every day. And then I would go to an atelier to paint from like 5 mm-hmm. until maybe 11 o'clock.
You were a teenager when you were doing this?
Yes, I was. And so what happened is that my teacher I guess, also thought that I was ready to have an exhibition because, you don't know, right, when you're so young. So I had an exhibition, but, you know, when I had that soul show, it made me realize that it was a certain kind of danger because I didn't know that if it was because I was, you know, good, or it was because, you know, sometimes, you know, your parents also invite friends and the other friends, and then they want to support their
friends. That's called having ringers in it.
Exactly. Yes. Uh-huh. So what happened is that I said, you know, so I thought, I said, so instead of saying, oh my God, I have had a soul show, I actually thought the other way, that's kind of interesting. It's kind of a danger here. I think it would be a very good idea for me to go to a place where nobody knows me and to start from zero and then really see what could I do, me living and being an artist.
So before we get to going somewhere where nobody knew you, was it a bit of a phenomenon? Did you make news in Peru for being 18 and having a sold-out show?
Well, I was in a magazine, you know, in some newspapers, but, you know, but then I left right away. Mm-hmm. So my career as an artist, really, I did not it's sort of like, I wouldn't say that it started in Peru, but I will have really continued, you know, here in New York. It was very, I had maybe one year when I was doing my work in Peru.
So you stayed at the university where you majored in psychology.
Well, that created a little very interesting rapport with my parents, with my father, especially because I did not finish psychology. It was 3 months I had left to finish. And then what happened is that something really occurred to me, which is that when, you know, when you study psychology in Peru, you are able to really have real cases in hospitals and clinics. And so I saw a group of friends of mine, they were maybe 8 to 10, small group, how they were analyzing that patient. If is he a psychopath? Is he a schizophrenic? You know, and I did not have that passion for it. And I said, this is not for me. It really became like a revelation. So I remember going out of the class, went out of, like a little terrace, you know, that it was at university. I said, I think I have to go to New York. I cannot keep on doing this because I'm really not doing this for me, but really for my parents. So I said, should I sacrifice 3 more months or should I start now? So I did.
So that's really interesting. I mean, to say I'm out of here.
Also, yes.
Even
I'm
in spite of the fact that it was only 3 months, which can either last 10 minutes or it seemed like 10 years.
Absolutely.
So did you apply to the Art Students League before you left?
No, I left after a week of that revelation. I left. Of course, my father, was very upset. I think he didn't talk with me for a while. And, I do understand, of course. And so I was going without her blessing, right? And then, as a parent, he had dreams. Maybe I was going to be a doctor and have, all these patients or a clinic or something, because I was always, very devoted to do anything that I would start. So, no, I went to the Art Students League directly because my father had a brochure from it, that he had a previous year that he had been here in New York, thinking that in the future I might come. So
let me just ask quickly, do you have any siblings?
Yes.
Okay, so you weren't leaving them high and dry, your parents?
No,
okay.
Thank God. No, there were 3 more. I had one brother and 2 sisters, but I'm the oldest. And so I came to New York and the first
Knowing nobody,
with my 2 little bags.
Did you speak English?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, because I was studying in an American school.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's the reason why I, chose also New York, because I knew I could speak the language, and that's very important. And so, and I met the director, Rosina Florio. She was an amazing, wonderful woman that gave me very strong, that gave me all the support. And she gave me a scholarship in the school. I mean, the fees in the Art Students League, thank God they're not that steep, so very available for students, especially international, to come and enroll. And then at the same time, he gave me a scholarship for materials, to start painting. And so that's how I started. So I was at the Art Students League basically almost 4 years, and I was from 8 o'clock, I think, until 10 o'clock. So 3 periods, because they have, one in the morning, in the afternoon, and then at night. So I was doing the 3 of them.
Wow. Mm. And where did you live?
Oh, many different places, you know, from starting like in the YMCA, you know, a very little room, you know, like double bed. My bags were up on top and I would sleep in the bottom. And, you know how it is, you know, you move from one place to
sure.
the other, uptown, downtown, Jane Street, you know. So.
And you were just very happy to be here.
I was living my dream, too. That, to me, was what it was, an artist in New York. So I didn't feel like pain or, you know, oh, my God, how I have left everything in Peru. No, I was really, I think it's a beautiful thing to feel free.
I was just going to say you were ready and you were excited.
Absolutely.
And what a great combination. And so they helped to form you and your art.
I think that I had a wonderful teacher. I had a couple of wonderful teachers, actually. One of them was Knox Martin. You know, he still teaches, actually, the Art Students League. And so he taught me a lot about composition. He developed the taste to go, for example, to the Met. You know, mm-hmm. the Met is, you know, free, so you could go many times. And study the masters, you know, Titian, Velázquez, Degas, and learn from there. So, you know, he opened my eyes to how to see these wonderful paintings.
Right.
Which I remember, I didn't go to school to study art. So, you know, so he introduced me to this new path. And so I think I'm, you know, very grateful for that. And then also he told me that, you know, something that I never forget, and perhaps it would be very important to share, you know, if there's other artists in, you know, listening, is that he told me that, you know, how important is that you should never pay for anything as an artist, because galleries also, you know, they require to work with an artist, and an artist requires the gallery. So it's very important, both collaborations. So both of us, you know, need each other,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's not one more than the other one. It wouldn't be galleries if they are not artists.
Right.
And the artists need, you know, sometimes places to exhibit. So it's both, right? So, and that's important because, you know, especially in New York, I mean, I'm sure in, you know, in a lot of parts of the world, there's a lot of, you know, galleries that they require that the artist has to pay money to exhibit, or, you know, or juried exhibitions that you have to pay. And I always said, artists, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay for anything. If anything, they have to pay you. So I think that's something that I never forgot when he told me that. And it was very important for me to always keep it in the back of my mind, because, you know, that gives you even more confidence.
Now, how did you become successful?
And
why, do you think?
Because, well, I think it's very important to be an individual.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important to have your own voice. And I think that also, it's very important to do things for the right reasons. Careers are different for every individual. And if you don't have a time frame, then it's wonderful, because then you don't suffer.
Right.
You know, you just keep on living through life. And so I didn't have a time frame. And I think that for me, it was very important to just keep developing. Since I didn't went to art school, I had to find it on my own. And, you know, sometimes when it's a little more difficult when you don't go to an art school, and especially a very good art school, because when you are studying, you know, the universities really have concerns and they support the careers of the artists, you know, by giving them, you know, the exposure to the art world, the connections to the critics or to the galleries as speakers or the lectures that they might go in the university. And so, because it's important also that when the artists leave the school, they carry the name of the university. They say, oh,
of course,
so-and-so was here.
Absolutely.
So it's easier that, you know, to break into the art world, I will say, not necessarily that's going to make an artist successful. That's going to just give them quicker opportunity to see what they have to share with the viewers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that this one opportunity, two, three, but if they cannot perform on the third, that's it too. So at the end, doesn't matter if they go to a very good school. It's just what they have to offer with their work to all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in my case, I guess we call it, I have a really wonderful friend of mine. His name is Quincy Troop. He's a wonderful poet. And Quincy said, well, it's what we call in New York, Remanesa, paying your dues.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my case, my dues were a little bit, you know, longer, I will say. You know, it would take me 15 years at least. So, and then let's remember that I start with painting, okay? So I was doing very well painting afterwards. You know, I was working with galleries in California, Miami. And
what were you painting? Were you expressionist?
I guess more expressionist, yeah. And, you know, with a lot of colors, you know, very strong colors, because coming from Peru, you know, it's quite you grow with it.
Right.
And then I realized that I didn't have nothing that will move me anymore to do these paintings.
That it had sort of dried up for you in a way?
I wouldn't say dry up, because, you know, the ideas were always there. It's just that every time I start a canvas, I knew very well how to do it or what I have to do to make it happen. And I like always the unknown.
And the challenge?
And the research and the challenge, you know, which is what I have with my work. Right? So at the moment, with my work at the moment. So one day in 1993, I did my last painting.
Before we just finish that, your paintings did sell.
Yes, very well.
Very well. And through galleries.
Yes, through galleries.
Okay,
yes.
So in 1993, you said, I'm putting the brush down.
Yeah. And of course, galleries will drop you, because some of them, they specialize, you know, working with painters. And then collectors, sometimes they get upset, because I guess they buy sometimes, you know, not because they love it, but also from an investment side of view. Then I got a grant, actually, and I went to Africa. 1994, I went to Africa, to the West Coast, to Ghana, and to the Ivory Coast, because, you know, my dream always was to go to Africa. I actually wanted to go as a Peace Corps. And so so my friend, you know, George Preston, he's also an intellectual and very knowledgeable in African art. I asked him, George, where should I go? And I said, well, Grimanesa, South Africa, you don't want. North Africa is very European. And then the East Coast is a lot of all the safari. So it's a lot of, you know, tourism and things going on. If you really want to know Africa, you have to go to the West Coast, which is considered deep black Africa.
Okay.
So that's where I went.
By yourself?
No, I went with my husband.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And so, which I'm glad I did, because what happened is that it took me about three, I will say, weeks to adapt to be in Africa. I was basically a lot in the villages, you know, of both, of Cote d'Ivoire, what they call, and Ghana. And then one of the amazing things that I learned when I was in Africa is about time. And I think it was the major gift that I got in my life is that Africans have no sense of time. There's no time for them. You know, I remember going to a restaurant and I was very hungry. And I asked, I ordered for fish. And then the fish would not come. And then, you know, I asked and they realized that they went out in the ocean to catch the fish. Of course, because they didn't have it.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it was crazy. So then it changed my life, because when then I came back, if I would have seen, before I would have seen you in the streets, I said, Sandy, hi, I'm running.
Right.
Now, if I would say, Sandy, how are you? How is everything? Is all okay? You're doing well? Oh, how wonderful, we should go for a drink.
Kind of so, living in the moment more.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And I think that's crucial, to live the moment, you know, because then you're living your time how it should be, instead of running ahead of it, you know. And yeah, Africa was wonderful.
And so that kind of changed your approach to art,
as
right?
a person. Yes.
And
yes,
so what happened when you came back here?
I did my first installation, you know, not necessarily a sculpture, but I did an installation of handmade paper with all called Fotomana, which means welcome in their language. And it was already, I was doing three-dimensional work. So that was my introduction, you know, to sculpture, I think, after Africa. And so it was quite important, you know, that trip for me. It put me in a very good path.
And then where did that lead you?
Well, that's very interesting, because then I had my daughter, Shamiel. I think it's also very, you know, a lot of times when I have lectures, it's very interesting for other women to see, well, you know, I have a partner, I have, you know, a daughter.
A family.
And, you know, and I still am able to do my work and travel and, you know, do what I love. And having Shamiel was another reasons that I'm grateful to be the person I am now. And as something that I remember from psychology was that how important is from the time that you're pregnant until the child is about 5 years old. Something that that's the only thing I remember from psychology.
Well, that's enough.
That's enough. So I said to myself, I'm going to put my, you know, I did not continue doing my work for at least 5-6 years because I also nursed until almost she was 4 years old.
Wow.
3 years and 8 months, yeah.
Wow.
So, and, but she is an amazing individual that I'm sure that, you know, you will be very glad to have one day in your program because she is a very wonderful teenager. She's only 16 and she already knows what she wants to do. And so I think I did well. And so then afterwards, I went to the Art Institute, you know, in Santa Fe. That was the first time that I went for a residence and I started working because it seems to, I don't know if it's for other women, but it seems that when I was nursing, you know, I had no creative juices. It was like I couldn't draw. I have no idea. And that
didn't worry you, did it?
Yes, of course. It concerned me because, you know, you don't know what is happening, right?
Right.
You know, it's, you know, you feel very strange. Here is a person I always have been very creative and doing a lot of work and suddenly not be able even to draw.
Right.
So it made me thought a little bit. But then I said, it must be, I understood that it was probably because of the nursing that you create obviously different types of hormones.
And then you had to go back to West Africa and think about time, that you didn't have to worry about time.
Exactly. So, and that's still, you know, I still think about that now, you know, because we live in a city like New York, which time is a very big factor, right?
I want, because this is not a visual show, you to describe some of your installations and your fascination and the beauty that you deal with in terms of light.
I was once in Iceland and I was able to see an aurora borealis. And it's something that did not make me stop saying, wow. I keep on saying, wow. And I didn't stop for a while. And I said, if I'm only able to share this, you know, with my audience and put into my work, that wouldn't that be amazing? And so, you know, it took 2 years, you know, to try to find out how could you adapt all that information or all what you have lived through your work.
Right.
And I started, you know, first I started with working with theater lighting. And then I realized that, you know, theater lights become very difficult because when they commission work, they still have to be maintained every 6 months. The lamps or the filters, right? They fade. So then I start working with LEDs, and normally I use very, very good brand of LEDs, and so I don't have to be concerned with any kind of maintenance.
And so that's your basic medium,
yes,
right now.
Yes.
I also want to give a quote that you had said, because I think this is really great about light that can be easily taken for granted, since much of what humans perceive comes from light, yet even that which is apparent can be mysterious. Light in its changing forms makes us contemplate and experience the ordinary in a different way.
Yes.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about growing up in Peru. How did that influence your work? And I know that you talked about living near the Pacific Ocean tides. And then I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this right. Uros?
Uros, yes.
Uros Islands. So you made an Uros house sculpture that, lo and behold, it was exhibited in Manhattan's Duffy Square. How's that for amazing? But
yes.
Talk about that, because that's really a seminal work of yours.
Yes, indeed. Because what happened is that, as probably you know, I wanted to go to Lake Titicaca for many, many, many years. I always knew that I was going to live abroad when I was growing up in Peru at the age of 13. I already knew. I didn't know exactly when. And so I figured out that people were going to ask me about my country. So I started, you know, traveling inside different states quite a lot. But one of the places that I didn't go before I left Peru was Lake Titicaca in Puno. Because, you know, the weather is sometimes quite tricky around that area. So I wanted to go there for many years until 2000, I think it was 10 or 11. I think it was 11. I finally said one day, you know, I'm going in one of the trips that I go to see to visit my parents. So, of course, people said, no, the weather is not good. And I said, this time,
doesn't matter.
Right. Even if I'm going to be inside, I'm going. So it happens to be that it was raining for 2 weeks. I arrived there and it was no more rain.
Okay, that meant something.
So beautiful that I was even able to see from the other side of the lake Bolivia, because Bolivia and Peru shared Lake Titicaca.
Lake Titicaca, yes.
But that's how clear it was, which, you know, is rare, you know, to be able to see it, especially on that time, which is January. Yes, January, that's when I went. And so I had an amazing, you know, wonderful experience, you know, while I was there in Puno, in Lake Titicaca. And then when I came back to New York, maybe a couple of, you know, days afterwards, you know, I was contacted to do a proposal, because it was the first time the Armory Art Fair, which happens every year in March, it's very important, was collaborating with Times Square. And so they asked me for a proposal. So I said, oh, my God, Times Square. This is one of the reasons that I also moved to New York.
Exactly.
Right? So this, for me, it was a very special place. It was not just coming from an ego point saying, you know, oh, I have to be in Times Square, right? So it was coming from much deeper reasons for me. And so I said, my name is not Grimanesa if I don't get this commission. So I know that I have to do something very close to me, to my heart, to get it,
mm-hmm.
because it becomes real.
Exactly.
And so,
and it's something no one else can do.
Yes. And so I said, what could I do? I just have come from Peru, so I decided I was going to do an Uros house with my own interpretation.
And what is an Uros house?
An Uros house is made by Totora reeds, which these islands in Lake Titicaca are made, you know, with from layers and layers
of these reeds. Uh-huh.
And they have to constantly be changing because of the decay, mm-hmm. right? So I like that part also of constant change,
mm-hmm.
right? Because my life, as at my own, is in constant change. So so I love these houses. And so I said, I'm going to do one. And I apply. I remember on a Friday, you know, I give a kiss to the computer. I said, you perform. And so the next day.
And you hit send.
Take care. They called me at 9 o'clock in the morning. And they just had, I was very, it put a smile on, you know, on me, because they were just asking me a lot of technical questions. So, and they accepted my proposal. They said, congratulations. You know, we think that it's a very interesting way of seeing the, you know, Uros, you know, Lake Titicaca nowadays, right? Your interpretation. They love the interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And so how to put the old with the new. And so that's the way I got it.
And how long was it in Times Square?
It was like 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Yes.
And that's one of the works that you're, I don't want to say most proud of, but just really means a lot to you, right?
Well, it was the first piece that I did, you know, after I just came back from the Uros,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, and I think that it probably is the piece that it has been the most public, because just going through Times Square, I was telling a friend of mine, I said, oh my God, so many people see it. I said, Grimanesa, hundreds of thousands of people see it.
For sure.
So I think, you know, probably it's one of my sculptures that have been the most seen, I would say. And
where is it now?
It went on a tour to the Lulu Museum in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's now at the Light Building, that it has to do, they have some connection with Pixar. And I'm glad, because it's a building about technology.
Mm-hmm.
So they are really embracing. It was actually interesting, because for the first time, people, you know, scientists were concerned about the interior. How is it built? You know, the power supplies and all the lighting, mm-hmm. versus just seeing, you know, just the outside, you know?
Right.
So it was very interesting.
It would be great for it to make a stop in Peru, don't you think?
Yeah, it might be very interesting.
When you look back at where you were, you know, at 11 and 18, can you believe what's happened? Or was this the way it was supposed to be?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think about the past that much.
Mm-hmm.
I really have to be honest. Because I would say, well, the past is already all done, you know? And
but we are who we are because of our past.
Yes, indeed. I agree with you. But I don't see myself thinking about the past that much,
mm-hmm.
because I'm so fulfilled, really, every single day of my life, that there is not that much time for me. It sounds crazy to think about things in the past. I think that I have been a tremendous amount of luck, and I really put a lot of hours in the
mm-hmm.
day,
mm-hmm.
and I don't give up. And, you know, if I had in the past a rejection letter, for example, you know, as artists, you receive a lot of those. And then I will just pass the page of my book very quickly, and then I will celebrate, you know. And I will always think, well, Grimanesa, this is only the opinion of 5, 7, 10 judges, you know. So I said to myself, oh, you know. So that's
what a healthy attitude. I got to rub up against you.
It really, indeed. My mother always told me, Grimanesa, you are always so positive. And I think that perhaps I myself brainwash myself of positivism. I think I do also.
Well, it's worked for you, don't
you
think?
With you, I think so, yes.
And so you're continuing to work in the medium. It's light.
I'm always very interested in working with different new materials, mm-hmm. right? Because remember, I like challenge. And so I recently started working with another type of LEDs, you know, these LEDs that they are like 100 feet continuously. They are usually in the LED world, sometimes, you know, they come in segments, mm-hmm. you know, of 10, maximum sometimes 20, 25 feet. These ones are 100 feet without any cuts, which in my case, when I want to do an uninterrupted circles, it really makes a big difference, right? And you know, you keep on evolving. You know, that's what it's about, you know. I think that it's very honest. People do feel that honesty when you have a lot of respect for them. But not only, you know, to my viewers, also to the space that I'm invited to do an installation, for mm-hmm. example, right? I always take in consideration what are the requirements of the space. You know, I just had an exhibition in Beijing at the Kafa Museum, and it was done by this very noted architect called Arate Sosaki. And, you know, it was quite difficult because you couldn't have any holes or any points of tension in the walls. So everything had to come from the structure all above, which is over 100 feet.
Wow.
So it brings a lot of challenges. And to be honest with you, sometimes I arrive to the space and I say, okay, where am I going to start? Mm-hmm. Of course, there are renderings, but one is the cyberspace world, you know, the computers, and then the other one is actually to be there and make it happen.
Absolutely.
Make it physically, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I just had the best time meeting and learning all about you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, Sandra. It's been my pleasure. Join us again for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.